Hey guys, what's up? It's Andres from DealSourcer.com. Today with podcast number 5. Today's topic is it too late to get into the property game? Has the train left the station? Has the boat left the harbor? Who knows? There's a lot of things going on and there's a lot of data that I constantly look at, and also I get a lot of comments from users and from conversations with other property investors around the UK, and it's really a big question mark whether the party is over, whether the punch bowl is already empty. So today I want to give you a little insight into capital markets in general from the perspective of a professional investor and what we may learn from those lessons that applies to property investing in the UK in 2019. So when you look at DealSourcer's new feature of estimating property values and calculating whether a property is potentially selling below its market value, aka BMV, what you find is that a lot of properties are not really BMV properties, and if they are, they're not massively undervalued. So you don't really find these -30, -40% price discounts to market value anymore. That naturally led me to ask the question, why is that the case, and what patterns have I seen in capital markets that may repeat at the moment in the property markets in the UK? So obviously, as you know, I come from the private equity world and I have looked at a lot of the macro private equity data in my, you know, position as the head of research in one of the largest private equity funds in the world. So what is the thing that I find most striking about those data? Here's a story from private capital markets. Since the 1980s, the IRRs, those are the internal rates of returns of private equity funds across the globe, not only US, but also Europe, Asia, other emerging markets, have come down, and this is a phenomenon that is very well documented by academics such as Kaplan, Shore, Jenkinson from Oxford University, where I spoke a few times as well on that matter. What happens in private capital markets is that things go in cycles. They're called vintages. Each fund has a specific vintage, just like a wine has a specific vintage. And there are good vintages and bad vintages. I used to explain this as follows to our investors. If you were to, you know, buy a wine, you would ask, what were the conditions in that year? What was the amount of rain, the amount of sunshine, on what soil was this wine grown, and so on and so forth. That is what determines the quality of the vintage. And naturally, in years where there's a lot of sunshine, the wine will be sweeter or better. Similarly, in private equity, in years, you know, where markets have gone down heavily and PE funds invest into depressed valuations, these funds will do very well because they will obviously benefit from the uplift in prices or the uplift in economic conditions. So all the funds that started investing in 07, 08, 09 during the crisis, they did notoriously well, of course, because they bought a lot of assets on the cheap. So that's the background. But the main message is that IRRs have come down in capital markets from these, you know, very high levels of 30%, 40% IRR funds, large funds, tens of billions of dollars. They have come down into the median region of maybe 12%, 10%, 15%, maybe good vintages, 18%. But the median IRRs in private equity have come down over the last 20, 30 years from around, you know, high 20s, mid 20s to about low teens to mid teens, you know, that's on average or median. Obviously, you have outliers. There's always the, you know, crazy funds that still make their 30%, but we're talking averages, and that's representative of what is going on in capital markets. So what is the reason that PE used to really cream it? And these days, I mean, you know, I'm not feeling sorry for these guys because they're still making pretty good money. But these days, not as much as they used to. And the reason for that is that PE used to be an exclusive club with the likes of KKR at the top. You know, if you've watched Barbarians at the Door, the fall of RJR Nabisco, then you know what I'm talking about. It's actually a movie worth watching. But there were a few really big private equity funds, such as, you know, Carlyle and KKR, and they started chasing these private companies and making these new leveraged buyouts that nobody knew how to structure. And obviously they had an advantage because they knew how to get the deals, how to evaluate the deals, and, you know, had the contacts to the bank to leverage the deals to make the IRRs. Obviously, over time, you know, people started noticing that these guys are buying, you know, private jets, yachts, and dating supermodels. So other people started looking at that game as well. And, you know, eventually new PE funds came up like mushrooms, and people started investing. The general public, the pension funds, LPs started noticing that there's money to be made. So money was flowing into PE. So not only did we get more, you know, PE funds, but we also got more dry powder, that we call it dry powder. That means there is money that hasn't been invested, but the PE funds need to invest this money because they have the mandate. So this money will flow into the private capital markets, obviously. What then happens is you get money chasing deal behavior. You have more people that are putting money into PE, you have more PE funds, and today we have about $2 trillion in dry powder, $2 trillion in dry powder. Obviously, we have also a lot more private companies. I think even the market cap of all private companies is currently higher than the market cap of the entire public markets. But anyway, so much money has been flowing into the private markets that people are chasing those deals. So basically, more people entered the game, which increased the multiples paid because the dry powder is so high. So IRRs must come down. This is economics 101. More people want private deals, more investors put money into the hands of PE funds, the demand goes up, we don't have that much more private companies around, so the supply stays more or less constant, and as a result, prices need to go up for demand and supply to reach a market clearing condition. That's economics 101. It doesn't take a genius to realize that that is the case, and that is why the IRRs came down in the private capital markets over time. Okay, you might be saying, Andres, that's cool with your PE war stories, but what does that have to do with property investing? Well, the thing is that we needed an equivalent to the amount of dry powder in PE for property investing in the UK, and the best thing I could come up with, to be honest, is the number of attendees of Samuel Leeds events or the number of subscribers of Samuel Leeds' YouTube channel, because pretty much everybody and their mother and brother and grandmother are currently investing in property in the UK, and all of that is on the back of the promise that getting rich quick is possible, as it is proclaimed by these, you know, investment gurus or investment pop stars, as one might say. So what I'm trying to say is that there is everybody and their brother chasing for property deals, and it is not a complicated game, right? Everybody can work out how to heat up that kebab in a microwave, can also value a property using, you know, a BMV valuation. You just look at a few comps and there you go, that's your value. And, you know, that's not very hard for people to do. And the cost of entry is very low because you get these high LTVs, so everybody can borrow money from the bank. And if you've saved a few thousand quid, you can just buy a property. All of that combined makes it already easy for people to get into the game. But on top of that, we're living in the networked age. You know, you hear like Reid Hoffman from LinkedIn and all these guys from the venture capital funds in the US and Silicon Valley talking about how connected we are, and that the internet is basically the, you know, central nervous system of the new world. So basically in your hand, you not only hold a phone, but you hold basically the whole encyclopedia and you have access to all that data. So it's very easy for the guy who sits in Hong Kong and who has, you know, handsomely benefited from a 4x increase in his property and wants to invest in, you know, maybe international markets, and all these guys flowing into the UK, buying properties with their strong, you know, dollars. And, you know, that's obviously changing the game because we have thousands and thousands of people that are looking at exactly the same thing as everybody else. Everybody knows about rent to rent, BMV, HMO, negative equity, you know, whatever it is that you're looking at. Trust me, there's thousands of other people looking at it, and it's not a secret anymore. The extra demand needs to be compensated for by higher prices, which depresses the returns and the cash that you can earn from investing in UK property. So in other words, to be honest, you are late to the party. The punch bowl has already been emptied by Samuel Leeds. He has put his big straw into the punch bowl and sucked the juice out of the UK property market. And now the Chinese Samuel Leeds and the, you know, Saudi Arabian Samuel Leeds is out there chasing your deals, trying to make you miserable every morning by beating you. Now, you might be asking, Andres, is this the end of it? Is property investing in the UK over? Look, I don't want to be the party pooper, but it's not looking great unless you're changing the game and you're going to do something different from everybody else. If you think that you can beat everybody to the same game, you're wrong, because you're swimming with the tide. You're just a little duck in a big ocean. And yes, you can crank, you know, the weekly hours up and do like 50, look at 50 deals per week, and that will work to a certain degree. But usually what works best is not focusing on the information, but focusing on the way you evaluate the information. And that's really what investing is all about, because the information is public. So what matters is not seeing the information, but the perspective that you have on the information. And with a superior perspective, you will make superior decisions and therefore generate superior returns for yourself and investors. So what can we learn from the masters of investing? And I bet everybody is already getting tired of me quoting Buffett and Munger. But unfortunately, those are the two best investors around and will be for a very long time. So let's look at what Buffett and Munger did. Buffett started out with the equivalent of BMV deals in public markets. He was buying companies selling way below their working capital position after subtracting all liabilities. That is, if you shut down those companies and sold them off, the cash in the bank alone would have been more than all liabilities owned. That's capital structure arbitrage. You shut down the company, you pay off all of your debts, and what's left in the company is your gain. So that's an arbitrage. Of course, the companies were bad companies, and Buffett is often quoted as calling them cigar butts. So what does Buffett mean by a cigar butt or by cigar butt investing? It's a soggy old cigar butt laying in the gutter. It's disgusting, it's repulsive, but it has one puff left in it, and that puff is free. So you take that soggy old cigar butt out of the gutter and you puff it for free, and then you throw it away. And that's what Buffett and Munger did for a very long time. And that's what made them very, very rich very quickly back in the days. But over time, as they evolved and competition got more, and also their obviously capital base grew, they couldn't do this anymore, because you can only do that in public markets with a small capital base. And obviously today, with computers around, markets are more efficient, so these opportunities are not around as much anymore. So Buffett and Munger evolved, and it was actually Munger who instructed Buffett to look at the quality of companies and not only focus on hardcore quantitative measures such as net current asset values and the like. So what they started doing is they evolved and they started judging the competitive position, the talent of the management, and other factors that are predictive of future earnings power. What they started doing then is they started evaluating these companies that are actually good companies, and they started paying up for good companies. So for example, in 1989, they put $1 billion at 12 times earnings into Coca-Cola. This would have been unheard of for Buffett before, they bought into these type of companies or in these type of investments. Usually Buffett was looking for buying at 1 times or 2 times earnings, not 12 times earnings. However, he knew he was buying an extremely extraordinary company with an amazing product that was selling globally and an extremely strong competitive position. So he turned that 1 billion into 10 over 10 years. That's 26% per annum. Clearly the competition was a lot lower in that game of paying up for really good companies, as nobody understood investing like Buffett and Munger did at the time they started doing this. How can we apply those lessons that Buffett and Munger went through, you know, in their maybe 30s, 40s and 50s to property investing in the UK? And is there something we can do about this, you know, phenomenon of everybody getting into property? Can we get an edge on the market by learning from Buffett and Munger? And the answer to the question is yes. What people misunderstand in property investing or investing in general is that the value of an investment is the cash flow that you can take out of it over its life. Okay, that is the value of any investment or any asset. And there are three ways that you can create value when investing in properties. And usually people only focus on one, and they apply these heuristics looking for value by only looking for specific deals. However, there are three ways value is created. Number one is you buy it below market value. Obviously, that's one way of capturing value. That's the most obvious one. The second way is you buy a very high cash flow yielding property. That basically means a very low PE, because the property will throw back a lot of cash every year. So if it has a cash flow yield of 33%, you're getting your investment back in about 3 years, and that's pretty good, to be honest. The third way is you buy capital appreciation. Certain properties in certain areas just appreciate in value because that area is going up in value. That might be because there's some developments like a tube station, or that just might be because people love that area and they're just pouring money into it and the value is going up. That's the third factor. So really, value is a function of purchase price, rental yields, and capital appreciation. It's not just one of the three, it's all of those three combined. Leaving one of them out is a huge mistake. So never forget to consider all value factors. What 99% of people do is that they focus on current market values, price, and rental incomes. While that is a good starting point, it's not sufficient. What you need to do is think more like Buffett. You want to know where the market value and the rental income of a property is a year, 2 years, 3 years, or 10 years from now, just like Buffett evaluates companies by looking at the cash that they will produce over the coming 10 to 20 years. You want to adopt this kind of long-term view to be able to evaluate the value of your property correctly. Okay, so don't be a fool and just look at the current, you know, metrics. Look at the metrics in the future. What will the property be worth after I put in some money, or what will it be yielding in cash flow when, you know, more people come into that area, and what is the capital appreciation of the future? So really, for example, you want to not look at the market value currently, but you want to look at the market value after you refurbished it. So what is the gross development value of that property, or what is the future rental income after I have brought it up to, you know, the highest standard in this particular area? Can I squeeze out more pounds for every pound that I invest? Okay. And what happens once this Elizabeth line is constructed? What happens to Maida Vale property? What happens when all these investment bankers can live in Maida Vale and be in the city in 5 minutes? Does that do something to the property value in terms of capital appreciation? So for example, you may look at a property that currently has an ROI of 10% and a BMV of 10%, i.e. you can buy 10% below market value, and that's, you know, not that exciting, and you might pass on that opportunity. However, that's because you're a cigar butt investor. You're still in the ice ages of property investing. You are still sitting on the tree rattling your coconuts. What you need to do is you need to not forget that value is about the future cash you can take out. We need to adjust to that. Everybody needs to adjust to that. If you don't, you are playing the same game as your Aunt Mary, who just got into property investing, and you're competing with her, and you want to get an edge on Aunt Mary. And the only way to do that is to rub DealSourcer's crystal ball and look into the future of what a property can do for you in terms of investment value. We will give you estimates for gross development value, future rental income, and capital appreciation. This is what we are working on at the moment. Sophisticated algorithms that allow you to judge what a deal may sell for in 10 or 15 months or 20 months. So that same deal that we just considered that was selling 10% below market value when adjusted for gross development value, sell actually at a 50% discount. Or when you adjust for the rent that you can squeeze out after some light refurbishment, or just a general increase in rents in that area, you might be getting an ROI of 30%, or not 10%, or capital appreciation in that area might be 10% for the coming 5 years. So when you adjust for these value factors correctly, looking into the future, what you do is you evolve as an investor from a cigar butt investor, just like Buffett in the early days, to, you know, an investor that is able to take competitive moats into account and estimate future cash flows and future market values, just like Buffett did when he invested into Coca-Cola in 1988. In this way, you can actually look at a property that looks pretty miserable, but when adjusting for the future values or value drivers, you might be locking in 26% overall. So that's pretty exciting. That's what we're working on at the moment. That's our future pipeline. Obviously, that's not an easy task, and we're putting in a lot of hours to make this dream come true. So everybody who's on DealSourcer.com will get this feature, obviously, included in your subscription. And I hope that this will change the game for everybody who's using DealSourcer.com, and I hope this will give you an edge on the market. And with that, thank you very much for listening, and I hope I see you next time. I'm out.